What sparked the idea to have this particular program put together?
Great question. Over the years, especially during the pandemic, Fennell and I were recognizing the value of the culture of Celtic music. And we even started square dances during the pandemic, just with two or three families here would come to the house. And it was a way to have our kids, you know, have something to look forward to when you had to do those types of exercises when you're not supposed to see large groups and things like that. So it was a lovely way to just kind of feel like you were having an outing with cultural music and teaching the kids to square dance. And then when everything opened up, we moved the square dances down to the hall and opened them up to the public. But it was a real awakening for us, like recognizing, oh my gosh, the world could be transformed with the culture of Celtic music. Basically, any culture is so beautiful, truly. Like, we don't want to lose our traditions, no matter what they are. And so for us, being so anchored in this Celtic music, we just had more of a passion in highlighting it, putting it on a wider stage to a wider audience, you know, however we can in our own little way. And we thought, you know, it's terrible that the Grammys don't have a category for Celtic music, you know, or the Canadian Juno Awards, or even the East Coast Music Awards, I don't think. And that's the East Coast of Canada. So I don't think they have a Celtic music category. We usually get put into folk or traditional. But we want to change that if we can try a little bit, you know? Like, it's a really ancient and beautiful tradition, and it is thriving in certain pockets in the world. And although on the grand scale it's only a little blip, it's a damn good blip. And so we thought, let's gather some great musicians and play with them and get on a bigger stage and just elevate that music and that style and the culture of it.
You've certainly put together a prestigious group of folks. Obviously, you and Danelle are very well known for what you've been doing for many years. Ross Ainslie, Scottish Piper, and Escaho, who was actually here with his brother and his band, We Banjo 3, a couple of years ago. I talked to one of the guys in the band when they came to Jorgensen for that. And you have Karen Matheson of Capper Cali, who you've known for some time. And, of course, Mary Frances has been doing a lot of things since she got into the recording studio when her album came out, First Light Recording. And she's been doing some collaboration. I know she did at least one thing with Enda Scahill that I saw. So she's getting out and doing the same sort of collaborative thing. So the real question is, how do you put the show together when you have so many highly skilled folks and you're going to play off of each other, and then you've got the broad scope of everyone's individual music to harness and schedule a show, which obviously has to have some planning involved?
Certainly does. We just had a big rehearsal here yesterday. I've been planning for months, really, and we're really feeling good about it. We're running through all the material and feeling it. So I'm loving where we're at with that. And as far as that piece of the puzzle, I mean, it's really just refining and refining and refining. You start with a big picture and you think, okay, everybody's got to play once. How many minutes could they each get? Well, maybe 15 minutes each. Let's see if we did that. And okay, that's like a two-hour concert if you add, you know, three or four group numbers. And okay, now there's the start. Okay, now let's refine that. What are some great moments we want in the show? You know, and you brainstorm. One of the things we want to do is feature the seven Celtic nations. There are seven Celtic nations: Wales, Isle of Man, Brittany, Cornwall, Ireland, Scotland, and Galicia in Spain. And so we want to highlight them and the music, and that's one special feature, you know, that we want to do. And there's dancing to include. There's like, you know, hey guys, what do you guys want to do? How do you want to represent yourself? You compile all these sorts of things. And we do have a show that's put together now. Once we are all together, there will be subtleties that we will want to embrace and put that in the show. And there's some things that need changing. For example, when I was putting Ross into the program, I sent a revised copy yesterday, and Ross said, I'm going to need some time to warm up my pipes. If I'm doing a pipe solo, I don't want to play whistle just before and then go into pipes. He said, I need a few minutes. So little things like that will get tweaked. It is a puzzle, but it's exciting, and I love nothing more. Just so proud of the talent and artistry that we get to work with. Ross Ainsley has been a name in my mind and in my home for decades, as well as Karen Matheson. I grew up listening to her through Capra Cayley and then Enda Scat Hill. We've become fairly good friends over the years with all our touring schedules, just meeting into one another, playing together. And I think what he does is tremendous, and what he's done for the awareness of banjo music with through We Banjo 3 was definitely something for the books. I'm just honored to be playing with all of them.
As you just said, you're putting it together piece by piece. Will there be other musicians, perhaps percussion, added, or is it just the group of folks that are going to be featured together? Because there's a lot of things that you can do with percussion, but also there are things that you might want to substitute it with, the banjo, even some of the fiddle stuff that you guys do to get that beat going.
Great question. We thought a lot about this, and we decided that, like, Danelle and I have been playing with percussion and drums for decades, and we've also done stuff without it, but mostly we have it. So we do love percussion hugely. We decided not to go with it for this tour, and the reason is because we really wanted to highlight the style and the level of musicianship. And if it's a feel-good vibe, everybody jamming out, sometimes the drums really, well, they very much support that kind of thing. And then in other ways, like this is really, I mean, it's going to be a fun night, it's going to be lively, but that is going to come from the musicianship of the artists, the All-Stars, the notes and the melodies and the strength of all that. So especially with the number of us that are going to be playing melodies and stuff, we didn't feel another layer in that way would help, like, bring out the more melodies. So we're focusing kind of more, I guess, in a traditional way. But with regards to your comments, you know, about the power of that groove, Mary Frances sometimes plays with a stomp box at her foot. So we definitely are using that in this show. And also we have a couple of guitarists with us, my son, Michael, who also plays accordion. And then our guitarist from our band, his name is Elmer Ferrer. He's supporting all this as well. And he plays electric guitar and acoustic guitar, but he's incredibly, like, he's like a chameleon. You know, even on some of Karen Matheson's beautiful slow songs, he has some pads and sounds on the electric guitar that just sound like water just dripping over the rocks. I don't know. That's what it feels like to me. It's just really smooth and cool and hip and embellishes all of that. So, yeah, that's where we're placing our focuses.
Well, the guitar certainly, with chord patterns and especially with electrification, can take over, because you also get the heavy bass sound if you need it on the lower strings of guitar.
Right.
So when you and Mary Frances and anybody else is going to be dancing like you usually do when you perform, that's certainly enough of a backbeat to do that. And I know you fiddle while, you know, you're playing your violin while you're dancing as well.
Yeah, that's right. And there is dancing in the show. There's, you know, a few dancing moments in the show.
From looking at the schedule, you've got a barnstorming tour. You're going to be on the road every couple of days performing. I know that's kind of normal for a touring musician, but also putting all these folks together, is there a kind of a break in between somewhere so you can chill out a little bit and then get your energy up for the rest of the tour? Because it's a very ambitious tour.
It is an ambitious tour. But for me, if I have a couple of days off, you just get into a different state of mind, and I don't want that. I want to stay in the game. These folks are used to that sort of thing. And we're also older now. I mean, if I'm going to take any time off, I want my time off to be at home.
Mm-hmm.
So I'd rather, when I leave home, just cram it all in. Let's do it. Let's keep the frame of mind in the one spot. Even though we enjoy our music, we're working too. Like, you know, just traveling around and setting up and all that part of it. I mean, the music is, I always say I get paid to travel. I don't get paid to play. But that stuff will all be a great joy. But all the stuff around it, it's work. So you're going away on a work trip too. Like, you have that mentality. And to take the days off, I don't know. I'm not a fan of that. Sometimes we have to do it because of the routing or however things work out. But to me, there's plenty of time on this tour to get a breath of fresh air, so to speak.
Why ask that question when it's over?
I have to ask this question before you go out on the road, because it would seem to me that if you're bringing together such an all-star lineup of musicians, it's been a while since Canvas came out, I know, which was the last recording that I recall that you have put out. Are there plans to record these shows as you're doing it, or to, after being on the road, go into the studio and put together a new recording so this gets preserved for all time?
We've talked about that. I don't know. I don't have an answer for you yet. We were going to do something where we record on tour. We've decided not to do that. I think that there will be another Celtic All-Stars that we will go in the studio for, and before the tour, that's when we would record, if we do that sort of thing. But actually, Janelle was just on with management yesterday talking about where do we go from here with All-Stars, like looking at potential touring periods for next year and that sort of thing. So that'll all become more obvious as we make those plans.
What do you expect that you're going to be getting out of all this as the collective ensemble? The camaraderie is obviously there to a certain extent, but there's nothing like being on the stage for that amount of time on a regular basis to make adjustments as they might need to be made as you're doing the performances.
Yeah, I mean, we have to allow for that. I mean, the one thing we don't want to do is thwart experience and creativity. The number one goal for everybody is you want to put on the best show. I mean, there's nothing more rewarding than when you have a show that not only has great music, but the flow is magical. And what I mean by magical is that if you sculpt the show in the right way, something happens where the receiver, which is the audience, can better internalize the music. It's a strange little subtle thing. And over the years, you just learn the magical combination of how the flow and rhythm of the show occurs. Because if it's done well and done right, you maximize just how it's received. You know, if you play, for example, what I like to do is if I have a really high energy number, by the end of the number, you finally got the crowd a little bit different than they were when the number started. They're more invested. Their heart rate is up maybe a little bit. Maybe they're tapping their foot now. Who knows? They could be up dancing. Whatever it is, you've worked at that to build that. Now keep it for a while. Keep it for a while. Wear them out a little bit. And just after you play, you know, another couple of numbers that have an energy that is maximized from the previous tune, you get them worn out a little bit, then boom. You play something just haunting, and now they're emotional, you know. And then you, after that piece, maybe you take combinations of the energy that was created and then the emotion that was just created. And it's like, have you ever gone to a comedy show?
The audience has to bring the performance to them, and their feedback goes down, and things can change in different directions.
That's right. But the coolest thing that I notice is that if you've ever gotten in that laughing state, or say you're hearing jokes or somebody's really funny, you get to a point where no one even has to say anything funny and you're laughing. Have you ever gotten like that?
Mm-hmm. Just the environment. You have to get it out.
It's the environment. That's right. So you're creating a show where you're stirring up the emotions. You're stirring up so that when you get to a certain point, everything is just goes in without even having to try. It's just like beautiful music, and it's just received. And so there will be on the road allowances for, oh, got to shift this. This isn't working. It's just not feeling right. You know, hard to articulate. But, and I think we've all been in this business so long that we're going to have pretty good sensibilities for all of that.
I know what also can happen with bands that travel together all the time, and or even for the first time, when you go through sound check, which I assume is going to be a regular part of what happens, as you're waiting on getting things set up and, you know, listening for the sound, sometimes you'll not play anything that's on the schedule. You just sort of do a tune that everybody knows because they grew up with it, or it's a classic standard for the genre. And then somebody says, well, maybe we can do that tonight. or let's work on that and we'll do it on the next show. Is that the kind of thing that's possible for this, that you might have to say, okay, we're going to move this one off and we're going to have a good time because this works?
Yeah, totally, totally. In fact, we do stuff like that all the time in our own band. Like when I'm on tour or Janelle and I are on tour, I have, you know, piles of stuff on my voice memos, like 6,000 or 7,000 things, literally from over the years, just haven't been flushed out. But I'm always pulling stuff out, say, hey guys, maybe we can get these polkas ready for tonight. And remember the last tour we did that, and we've got this nice new number, you know, ready to go, could be recorded, anything. So that's kind of how it works too, because like I said, we like to maximize the time on the road. You're in the musical focus. And so I would be using those moments of sound checking and all that, you know, hearing people noodling around. We'll get to know each other well as well. So we'll start getting comfortable with, you know, if you do hear someone noodling around, you say, hey, what's that, you know, or let's do something with that, or what ideas, or you get that just comfort to be able to speak out and speak up when you feel something.
You also have a new book out. I know you're probably going to be talking about that in different venues, but why now with the book? Because it's an undertaking that is looking back inside, looking into the past, and perhaps looking forward for someone who's going to write. Why was this the right time to put out I Have a Love Story?
Well, I'll tell you, I was never doing a book. Never doing a book. I remember Janelle said to me a couple of times, and other people have said to me, you should write a book. I'm just like, I'm not writing a book. I don't have anything to say. Like, no, who wants to read about me? Like, this is my attitude, right? I'm just like, it's such a small little niche group of people. Like, I can't take the time. I don't have the time. I'm not doing a book. Like, I never even thought about it very much. I mean, I'm probably giving you more articulation than I ever really thought about it. I just wasn't doing a book. Anytime somebody mentioned it, I thought, yeah, that'll never happen, is what I thought. And so 7 years ago, well, going on 8 years ago now, I became so overwhelmed one day with the amount of suffering and devastation and heartache and actual evil in the world, like with the headlines in the news and current events over the course of, years really, but over the course of weeks, there's a bunch of things. Like, I don't watch news, but you know, you see headlines and stuff. And even my mom in Cape Breton, protected Cape Breton. You think you're exempt from everything, right? You're never protected anywhere. And just a ton of stuff going on there. I was just shocked. I'm like, oh my gosh. And so I was just feeling really down, thinking, what kind of hope do I have for a future for our kids? Like, what kind of world do they have to live in? And that led to me thinking about my kids and realizing, oh my gosh, like, I'm so lucky. Like, look at my parents. What a great upbringing I had. You know, my music career, the community of the music, my husband, what a great father he is, all these things. And then I became so emotional and overwhelmed with the discovery. I thought, oh my gosh, I have a love story. And I thanked God aloud. I was crying and just saying this aloud. I have a love story. I have my own love story. Thank you, God, you know. And then I started thinking, like, maybe people just have lost sight. Like, the world has become so noisy and about anything and everything. I'm just like, maybe people have lost sight of the fact that the key to life is really love, and simple love, and everyday love. And that's what anchors a human being for life. And I just wanted to share that. I mean, I had to give people some information on my career, but that was so secondary. The point of it is just putting one foot in front of the other and making loving choices every day and learning about love and never giving up on trying to become better.
But you also include, apart from the inside stories of your career and the people that you've met along the way and some of the collaborations you were able to have throughout your career, not everyone puts family recipes in their book, although I have seen it. I've seen a lot of books like that with bluegrass folks and some pop folks. That was something that does make this stand out a little bit differently, to have some family recipes for sticky toffee pudding and porridge brown bread and things like that.
Yeah, well, that's because to me, food is love. I mean, even the simple act of my mother cooking me meals you know, in this story, I don't say, hey, it's my mom was so loving, or maybe I did mention that, but I'm just saying, I didn't point anything out like blatantly obvious. I just told stories about how, hey, I remember these great food my mom used to cook, but underlying all that, I'm saying, these are, you know, recipes I grew up with, and now I'm realizing that my mom went through a lot of effort to do this day after day for decades. Like, that says something about her love for her family. And that's why they're in there, because it's attached to all this. My stories of how I grew up and the opportunities I was given, and getting to understand people and traveling with people and playing music for a crowd, and this is all attached to love, to honing your craft, the dedication. And so I also wanted to make the story a good read. I wanted it to be interesting to people. I wanted it to be a story instead of a preaching thing about love. I wanted to just say, look, I had some wonderful things in my life, and here they are. Yeah, so that's kind of why that's all that's in there. And it is a different format. It came from a different place, I guess. Like, it was a very unique moment in my life when I had this thought to write a book.
But you also include some transcripts of your music, which was a lot different. Normally that comes out as a separate book for a performer, because people want to see how that music is done and try it for themselves, especially an instrument like the violin, where there are thousands and thousands of students of violin and people that listen to your music that maybe want to give it a try and see how difficult and creative it is.
Yeah, it's a beautifully creative instrument. I think if you just listen to it a lot, if you want to get into something like that, just listen to all sorts of varieties of people playing the instrument in different ways. And I mean, that is a huge lesson, and that's the easy part. Just listen to music. It goes in.
Anything else we should know about this tour?
No, as we're talking about the book, I'm realizing, well, this tour is all part of that. I mean, I think the musicians on this tour will have similar stories about how the music was given to them or shown to them, like cultural experiences, you know, that we recognize now were really special, and efforts on our parents' part. Even in a couple of days, you know, we're having a house party here because my brother is coming up from Cape Breton, my brother and sister-in-law. And so my kids are so excited. I mean, we've been mopping the floor today. Some of them are watching the hockey game right now, but just working together to create this great space to have music parties. There'll be fiddle music here Saturday starting from 7 o'clock and probably going to 3 in the morning.
Sounds like a musician's house to me.
Yep.